You're listening to the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 90.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Alex Pardo here, bringing you another masterclass with Don Costa. And guys, before I get bring Don on here, again, I just want to say a thank you for joining me. You know, the podcast continues to grow every single month. We're getting more and more downloads, and I've been getting a lot of positive reviews, not only on iTunes, but just people that are reaching out to me, you know, via the Ask Alex app on the website and sending me emails. And so, you know, you guys are what motivate me to continue to do this. And I'm always striving to get top experts out there, people that are, you know, at the top of their game, doing big things in their markets. And Don is somebody who I connected with on Facebook. We have a lot of mutual friends in the industry. And so we recently met and, you know, come to find out we have a lot in common. You know, the way that our business models are very similar, but he's doing things that I'm not doing in my market. And so we connected and I thought it would be awesome to have him on here because he's been doing this for a long, long time. And he's been through the ups, he's been through the downs. And I knew that he could jump on here and just deliver great content and value and something that, you know, you can get a lot out of. Before I have him come on here, just remember, one of the things I always stress is speed of implementation. You know, there's so much information out there. There's so much content. There's great podcasts and there's so many videos on YouTube and on the internet. Don't get overwhelmed and drowned by all that information. You know, I think what I'd like to challenge you with is try to pick one or two things that Don shares on the interview here and implement it as soon as possible in your business. Right when you finish listening to this podcast, how can you get the wheels turning and how can you start building that momentum so that you take one gold nugget that he shares and you can apply it in your business to see some results. So again, I appreciate you tuning in here. Having said that, man, Don, it's awesome. I know we kind of went back for a bit and I'm glad to finally have you on, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on. I'm glad to be here. I'm excited to do this, man.
Yeah, fantastic. So listen, for the people that are listening that don't know who you are, and again, I know you and I, you know, we recently met and we've had some conversations, but we were talking a bit offline and I think you have a very compelling story, man. I think it's something that a lot of people can relate to, at least in certain aspects. Maybe if you can kind of take us back to how you got started in this business and then from there we can kind of transition into, you know, what we're going to talk about today, which is networking, the power of networking. And, you know, if the first thought that you have when you hear me say networking is, I'm not very interested in that. It's not a sexy topic. I already know all about networking. You know, I ask you to kind of suspend your belief for a second, because as you're going to hear in Don's story, this was a big reason that he was able to kind of rise up quickly and achieve success. And so whether you're just getting started or, you know, you've been doing this for years and you flipped hundreds of houses, I'd like you to just kind of put your belief on pause and listen to what Don has to say. And then we're also going to talk about subject two. And that's an area that we haven't really, you know, dove into too much on the Flip Empire show. So yeah, Don, man, I just kind of wanted to, you know, set the scene for what we're going to cover here. But yeah, man, I'd love to hear your story and how you got into this business, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I got into the business in 2003, basically, and it's not super sexy the first time around. You know, I got into it, I had somebody offer to put some money up, and if I went out and found some projects, and I went out and started door knocking for pre-foreclosure, and found some success in putting deals together, and made a lot of money, and basically thought that everything I did was magic. Like everything I touch was, you know, just turned to gold. Right. And got a big head, made a lot of money. And then I got humbled by the market. I think like a lot of people who were investing at the time, I got really humbled by the market because I wasn't running my business like a business. So, and basically my second life in the business started in 2012. I decided that, you know, at the time I couldn't find a job. I was trying to get a job. No one would hire me. I had too much experience, or I didn't have a good degree. And I was kind of stuck in this rut of, what am I going to do? And I was kind of scared of the real estate market. I didn't have enough money to get started in it again, I felt at the time. And, you know, I'd lost basically everything because the market crashed. So I was really kind of scared. And I had one of those aha moments where I looked in the mirror and I was like, you know, what am I going to do? You know, I'm at this crossroad. I have two kids. I have a wife. You know, we have all these bills that are piling up. I'm not making any money. What am I going to do? What am I good at? What I love? And when I had that moment, I realized that I loved making deals, right? I loved the real estate game. I loved the freedom of it. And it was the only thing that I really felt that I was super, super good at. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this, but how am I going to do this? I have no money. I'm literally going to the gas station. I'm putting gas in my car with quarters. I'm buying a gallon of gas at a time with quarters just to get my kids to daycare. You know, I mean, no money, right? And I was like, how am I going to do this? I can't market. So what am I going to do? And so basically I got on Craigslist and I posted a post that said, basically I'm a flipper. I'm looking for private money. I need an investor, you know, let me know if you're interested. Uh-huh. And then I got on the phone, I started calling agents and I'm like, I'm a flipper. I'm looking for properties. You know, this is what I can do. If you got deals, you know, let me know. And I had no business doing any of this, right? I had no money at the time, but I got on the phone, I got on Craigslist and I'm calling people with the We Buy Houses ads. And I'm like, okay, are you a wholesaler or are you a cash buyer? If you're a cash buyer, great. I'm looking for people to partner with. I'm looking for people with money to help me do deals. If you're a wholesaler, you know, great. I'm looking for properties. So basically I just started networking. I mean, that's the gist of it. I got on the phone and I started calling people. I started posting on Craigslist. I started calling other people's ads. I started calling people's bandit signs and I just started getting myself out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And lo and behold, I had an investor. I had probably five or six people call me and say they're interested in investing, but I had one guy that was serious. And we met for coffee a handful of times, you know, for me to gauge him and him to gauge me. And I realized this guy was a real deal. And as that was happening, I had agents calling me back, setting up meetings to talk about, you know, helping me find properties. I had wholesalers calling me back saying, hey, we got some stuff lined up you might be interested in. It just all started to come together, right? I mean, it was an exercise of hard work and determination and it just kind of all created this perfect storm for me to really start to gain some momentum and get the ball rolling, if that makes sense.
You know what, man, there's so many key takeaways, you know, that hopefully, you know, if you're listening, it resonates with you. And we didn't talk about systems. We didn't talk about automation there. We didn't talk about all these shiny things that people talk about. But, you know, I think sometimes, especially now, you know, we discount the power of the phone and we discount the power of just talking to people, building relationships, letting them know what you do. And so when I have people come to me and they say, I can't do deals in my market because I don't have any money for marketing, or I can't compete with the big people, you know, I think to myself, someone like you, right, that you just shared how you were putting quarters in your gas tank to be able to take your kids to school. You didn't have any money, but you didn't let that stop you. And I think a lot of people, they let their current situation and their lack of resources, whether it's time, money, or whatever, you know, limiting beliefs they have, they let that stop them from taking some type of action. And it's a ripple effect. You know, you start making waves and eventually things are going to happen. And like you said, it got to a point where things just kind of all came together. And so what I love about what you shared so far is that you didn't really know how it was going to happen. You just knew that you had to take that first step, the second step, the third step, and that things were going to come together. So, yeah.
Right. And, you know, and the other thing that I did is I made a decision to act as if, I posted this on Facebook a while back and I didn't realize the power that the as if has, but it has power for people. You know, I acted as if I was already successful. I acted as if I already had the money. I acted as if I was already doing it. And I went out there and with that confidence that I basically fooled myself into having, you know, I made something happen. You know, I was asking agents to coffee. I was asking, you know, wholesalers to lunch. I was building these relationships. And I don't know if I knew at the time the foundation I was building, right? I don't know if I realized at the time. I just knew I had to do something. And what I had done through networking with no money spent is I built relationships that I have to this day. I have agents. One of the agents that I actually met during that time works for me in my office now.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah. So, you know, basically, you know, I posted an ad on Craigslist for somebody to help me evaluate properties and help me, you know, basically find the ARV. And that gentleman works for me in the office, too. So some of the investors I met at that time, you know, I still work with. Some of the wholesalers I met at that time still bring me a couple deals a month each. So, you know, all of that basically was a foundation I was laying to what is now my business today. In our business today, we do somewhere around 100 deals a year flipping.
Okay. Awesome.
And most of the transactions that I do are from networking still. You know, if I don't hear from you over a couple of weeks, or, you know, maybe it's a month I haven't heard from you and you're a wholesaler I work with, I'm texting you going, hey, you know, I'm still looking for properties. Don't forget about me. Let's go do lunch. If you're an agent that I work with on a regular basis, I'm texting you and saying, hey, I haven't heard from you in a while. Let's go do coffee. You know, I'm still looking for properties. The primary foundation of my business today, mail, we do all these different aspects, Facebook marketing, we do all these aspects of business and marketing to bring in deals. But the majority of the deals that I do still come from networking. And guess what, guys? I mean, they are the best ROI because I haven't spent any money to get them.
Yeah. Yep. It's interesting that you said that, man, because we recently had, do you know Brian Harris? He's on Facebook a lot. He's constantly posting. He's an investor out in a wholesaler out in Memphis.
I don't think I've heard of him now.
Okay. Well, Brian got started under Sean Terry, you know, 3-4 years ago. And the guy's doing multiple six figures a month, wholesaling every single month. And so when we had him on the show, I asked him, I said, you know, what are the marketing channels that are producing most of your deals? Like, how are you able to do, you know, consistently six figures a month? And here I am thinking the guy's going to tell me that he's putting out, you know, he's sending out 50, 75, 100,000 postcards a month. Like, here's what I'm kind of bracing to hear, right? I'm like, oh, this guy's got a huge marketing budget. And he tells me that he's been consistently doing six figures a year wholesaling for over a year now. And 70% of his business comes from referrals and from networking.
Right.
And it floored me because it's like, you know, even I understand the power and the leverage of networking, but when you hear it quantified like that, and you're basically piggybacking on his experience that you're getting a lot of deals just from networking and the relationships you've built, it really, really, like, I don't know, at least for me, it drives the point home that that's an area where you just cannot take for granted.
You can't. And it's something that it has to be implemented in your business, regardless of how big you get, regardless of what you're doing in your business. I mean, I'm at a point now where we spend, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars a month in direct mail. We'd spend out, we send hundreds of thousands of pieces of mail a year, and we do deals that way. We buy off the MLS. We buy, you know, like I said, a dozen different ways, but I will still pick up the phone and call people. I will still take an opportunity to create a new relationship because there's just so many things that come from it. You know, yeah. There's so many opportunities that come from it. You know, I call bandit signs still. It's just, I guess it's just part of my being now, because I built my business that way, that I just do it on a regular basis. But it's a core part of our business. And it's opened up so many doors, so many opportunities. I mean, you and I know doing the podcast, we build our podcast and find our guests that way too. Networking is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
In every aspect of the business, I think that it's people are so afraid to go out and talk to people. And really, I mean, if you're in a market where there's a lot of competition, you need to be the guy everybody likes.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
yeah.
When I was knocking on doors, and I think I learned it back then when I was doing pre-foreclosure and didn't realize it. When I was knocking on doors and at that time in 2003, 2004, 2005, there was so much competition in the market. Everybody was a real estate investor. Everybody was knocking on doors. Everybody was trying to buy pre-foreclosure. The thing that separated me, the two things that separated me from my competition was, one, I made sure I was as likable as I could possibly be. And two, I went back as many times as I had to get that deal. I didn't take no for an answer. I went back to talk to you about your dog, your car, your kids, anything I had to. And when you sold to somebody, you were going to sell to me because I was the guy you liked.
Yeah. And you're front of mind, you know, I mean, people, right. If you think that you connect with someone and following up every so often is going to do it, people are going to forget about you. You got to be like front of mind. And it's all about timing, right? So let me ask you this, Don, it sounds like you're very, well, let me not put words in your mouth. Are you, when it comes to networking and building relationships, do you have a specific system you follow? In other words, are you very strategic with how you network, and, you know, is it incorporated into the fabric of your day? Like, is it part of your to-do list, or is it more, it's like you said, it's part of your being and you don't really time block when you're going to network, or you don't plan on making X amount of calls or going, you know, meeting X amount of agents out for coffee or lunch? I guess what I'm asking is, are you strategic in how you network, or is it just, you just know it's part of what you have to do and you just kind of do it?
I think it's more of the latter. I know it's part of what I have to do. I don't really, there's no rhyme or reason to the extent of it. I think it's, I'm a little ADD. I think a lot of people that are in business for themselves are ADD as well. And so I'm not necessarily good with downtime. So when I have downtime, I'm usually doing what I call trolling Craigslist, or I'm on the phone texting. And when I say trolling Craigslist, I mean like I'm going through the We Buy Houses ads and I'm calling everybody that I haven't seen before and saying, you know, are you a wholesaler? Are you a cash buyer? If you're a cash buyer, hey, let's partner on something. If you are a wholesaler, I am a cash buyer and I want to help you be successful as a wholesaler so that you can bring me more deals. So I'm doing that. You know, if I haven't heard, you know, I'm thinking about, okay, who haven't I heard from? Okay, well, I'm texting you and saying, all right, hey, you know, I haven't heard from you in a while and I'm still looking for properties. So definitely keep me in mind. So I think it's more a habit now than anything, but most definitely if it's not something you do, I would say time block it and make sure you make it a habit, turn it into a habit for sure.
Yeah. For somebody that might be getting started in the business, or again, even the seasoned pro out there, would you recommend and advise, hey, you know, set a goal to make, you know, meet X amount of new people per day or per week, or, you know, meet with a certain amount of wholesalers, agents, cash buyers, whoever, people that you're going to do business with. You know, at least for me, I guess in my mind, I operate a little better. And I guess it's part of just knowing how you function and what makes you tick is if I set a specific goal on something, I'm more likely to hit it as if I just kind of go. And it's cool to hear your perspective because obviously it's worked for you. And I don't think there's a right or wrong. It's just figuring out, you know, what's going to make you actually do it. You know, whether it's setting a specific goal or just, hey, I know this is important. I got to do it. And I got to set aside some time to do it.
You know, I would say set a goal. You know, I would go on to, you know, make it a goal, maybe go on to Craigslist a couple times a week and just see if there's anybody, any new postings. You know, make it a goal to reach out to, you know, figure out who the agents are in your market to deal with REOs or deal with, you know, different aspects of the market where you could potentially buy and reach out to them. You know, the cool thing about being friends with agents, we haven't talked about it, but the cool thing about being good friends with agents is you get the first phone call before stuff gets listed.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's a plus, right? I mean, there's a lot of times where an agent calls me and says, hey, I got a seller. They want to sell this property. They don't really want to put it, you know, on the market because they don't want a whole bunch of traffic. They just want to be done with it for whatever reason. And you were the first person I thought of. Mm-hmm. You know, that's huge. So, you know, definitely, you know, become friends with these guys, you know, and gals, you know, as much as possible. And if you got to set a goal to make it again a habit, then do it. Make it a point that anytime you see a new bandit sign, call that bandit sign, because a lot of times that's a, you know, a new wholesaler. And if you're a wholesaler, that's somebody that you could co-wholesale with. If you're a flipper, that's somebody that you could be buying properties from. So, you know, there's just a lot of reasons to do it. And those of you who put bandit signs out, I know a lot of people will say, well, I'm not getting, you know, necessary seller calls from bandit signs, depending on your market. Right. But I know that I call them. So you're getting investors. So yeah, that's still helping you build your business. So, you know, it depends on your market, whether or not you get a lot of, you know, investor calls or seller calls, but they still have a benefit, right? So, make it a habit to call other people's bandit signs and introduce yourself and build those relationships and get yourself out there and you know, just almost to the, you know, don't be annoying, but almost to the point of relentless, right? Just be relentless about doing it. And that's how you get it done.
I'm with you, brother. Dude, I can't tell you how much money I've made throughout the years just because I decided to call a bandit sign when I was on the road doing nothing but maybe listening to a podcast or, you know, just hanging out with the family. I see, it's like you mentioned, it's just part of who I am. It's second nature. I just pick up the phone and I call. And like you said, don't just have a one-track mind that, okay, I want to call and see if this person is a wholesaler, right? Or if this person is a buyer. Or if they're not a buyer, figure out what they do. Figure out where you could potentially add value and see if there's synergy there, you know? So the person that puts out the bandit sign, they could themselves be a cash buyer. They could be a wholesaler that, like you said, Don, you could do a co-wholesale JV deal with. I mean, they could, there just could be so many ways to put deals together between you guys. It's just a matter of picking up the phone and making the effort to go out and build these relationships, and you never know what's going to come of it.
Absolutely. So one more thing I wanted to cover, you know, I get postcards and letters from other investors. What do you think I do with those? I call them.
You call them. And you probably keep them in your swipe file too, I would imagine.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
So you know, any opportunity to connect, you just got to take. And then, like you said in the beginning, it may not be sexy, but I literally built my business off it. And, you know, we make a tremendous amount of money. We do, you know, we do well, we're all happy, here in my organization. And it all came from networking. You know, I didn't have the money to market. I want to read it. I didn't have it. If you say, I don't have any money to do this or that, you still have no excuse to get started. You just got to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And you can make some great things happen. You get that momentum and it takes off on your own, like you said, the ripple effect, and it can become just ridiculously good for you.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. Let me ask you this, man, before we kind of segue over to subject twos, because I know that's something I wanted to kind of spend a little bit of time on. What's your process like? And maybe I don't want to sound like I'm overthinking this. I'm just curious. I always like to kind of pick people's brains on, do they have a specific system they follow? Like whenever you connect with people, let's say you're, you know, on your downtime, or, you know, you're doing whatever at home, or even when you're working, when you connect with people, do you have a certain way in which you document that and maybe put it as a follow-up? Or is it just when that person comes to mind, is you'll send them a text or you'll give them a call? I'm just curious because I also network a lot, and I know sometimes I get very motivated and I'll jump on Zillow and Craigslist and I'll fire off 30, 40, 50 text messages. And then over the course of the next few days, I get a lot of incoming calls, a lot of incoming text messages. And at times I feel like I could be better in terms of making sure that all that information is documented and put up into some sort of follow-up system. And I've spoken so much in the past about the importance of follow-up. Most of my deals come from follow-up. So, but I feel like with networking, I could probably do a better job of making sure that I'm more systems minded. I approach it more with a systematic, from a systematic approach of just, hey, let me reach out to this person at least once a month. Or I'm curious if you do anything like that, or if, again, it's just kind of, you do it so much that you inevitably just end up connecting with the person.
Again, it's the latter. I'd like to say that I have a system to the madness. We have a CRM here in the office that we utilize pretty heavily.
What do you use?
We use Podio.
Okay, awesome.
We utilize it pretty heavily when it comes to all of our direct mail marketing. You know, we have a couple acquisitions guys, and they utilize it when they're writing offers in the MLS. They're doing any kind of short sale stuff, any kind of direct mail. They use it on a regular basis, but I can't say that I do. Again, for me, networking is just kind of the core of who I am. I was hungry. I needed to make it happen, and I got out there and did it, and there was success in it, and it just became the core of my being. So I'm relentless to the point that, you know, I think it's just a matter of that I to continue follow up until I get a response. You know, I would like to say definitely that I have a system in place for that, but you know, sometimes systems are great, right? Like, I'm at a point in my business right now where I have all the right people in place and they all know what they're supposed to do and the business runs, and I don't even see our houses anymore. We buy them, we rehab them, we sell them. I don't see them. You know, and it's all well and good. But in some things for me, the system takes away the personal touch that this business needs. This business is about relationships and maintaining those relationships. If you want to be successful long term, you really got to be good at building relationships and making sure they're win-win, and then letting those people know that you're still there. Like we said earlier, being friend of mine, being remembered. And so when it comes to networking, I try to do everything I can just to make sure that I keep the personal in it. So
yeah. Let me ask you this one last follow-up, man. I'm sorry, I have things that come to me, and for me, this kind of stuff is exciting, even though we've said before it's not sexy. I understand the power of networking. And so it's something that I don't think enough people talk about, because it's, you know, unfortunately, people don't want to really hear about how to network. But what percentage would you say of your networking is over the phone or through email on the computer versus face to face?
It's probably all about equal. I try to get face-to-face time as much as I possibly can. A lot of it is text message or over the phone, though. Probably more 60-40, you know, but primarily it's text. You know, I'll be texting or calling you, and you're just kind of following up. And then if I can get, you know, an opportunity for us to sit down together and have a cup of coffee or have a lunch, I definitely take advantage of that. So
got it.
I just try to be as likable, you know, it sounds corny, but I try to be as likable as possible.
Yeah,
I want you to think of of me, you know?
I get it, man. I get it. Well, cool, man. So let's talk a little bit about subject two here. I know, you know, you've done all types of deals. You wholesale, you fix and flip, you're an expert in private money. And so there's so many different directions we could take this call. But when we were talking prior to, you know, to the podcast here, you mentioned subject two, and that's probably an area where we haven't covered really in the past. And so, you know, we're not going to spend subject two. I mean, there's seminars out there on just subject two, right? So obviously there's only so much we're going to be able to cover in 10, 15 minutes. But if somebody is hearing the words subject two for the first time, could you explain in a nutshell what subject two means? And then we can kind of get into what you're doing in your business with subject twos. Like maybe you can even, I don't know if you've closed a deal recently in the last maybe 6 months or a year. Maybe we can talk about that and use it as a case study to illustrate, you know, how powerful that specific tool is.
Right. Well, subject two is very, very simply explained. In a nutshell, it's taking possession of a property subject to its current and existing liens and loans. So whatever is owed against the property stays owed against the property, and you're taking the property subject to that. So basically, if the homeowner owes $100,000 on the property and is selling it to you for $110,000, you basically give them $10,000, and then assume's the wrong word, but you assume the responsibility of that loan. Uh-huh. There are some, you know, potential pitfalls with that. I mean, banks do have due on sale clauses, so you need to be very careful about how you go about doing things. But I've never seen a bank call one due.
I've never heard of somebody having, the due on sale clause called. Never heard of it.
I've done hundreds of them that way, and I haven't had it happen to me. So I will say that in my humble and personal opinion, it's more of a short-term play. I mean, I wouldn't do it and try to hold the property for 5 or 10 years because, you know, you just run into issues that way. But for me, I used it as a tool for flipping. And, you know, especially when I first got started in the business, I didn't have a whole lot of capital available. And this is back, you know, around 2003, 2004. I would basically do everything subject to. Typically I bought a home that was in default. I would take it subject to the existing loan, give the homeowner some money for their equity, and then we'd rehab it and resell it and make a profit. The advantage to it is for those of us who work on cash returns, which a lot of investors do now, you know, which is your money invested. You know, if you invest $100,000 and you want to make a 15% cash on cash return, you want to make $15,000 profit, right? Mm-hmm. So you maximize your cash on cash return, because now on a property, you might say your rehab's $30,000, you've given the homeowner $10,000, and you've taken the property subject to, you're only invested $40,000. And if you make a $15,000 profit, just using a round number, your cash on cash return is huge at that point in time, mm-hmm. versus going all in on that property. So the advantage is, you know, you can if you're limited on funds, you can make your funds go further that way. You get a greater return if you do it properly. So there are a lot of advantages to doing it that way. And, you know, it keeps the cost of your money down too. I mean, if you're borrowing hard money or you're borrowing from a private investor, it keeps the cost of the money down. So it's a great way to do it. You know, I have had a lot of success with it, and yeah, I mean, it's just a great tool.
Yeah. So when do you typically, you know, in what scenario do you try to, you know, pick up a property subject to? I mean, maybe if you can kind of give us some checkpoints, you know, I mean, obviously you probably don't want to do subject twos if it's, you know, a variable rate mortgage, for example, you know. So do you look for certain things like, you know, low interest rate, fixed rate mortgage, what are some of the parameters that you kind of look out for, so that when you see an opportunity, you say, okay, this could be a good subject too.
Well, I would say that none of that would really be a concern. It depends on your strategy. If you're doing it for a long-term play, then you want to take those things into account. But if you're doing it for a short-term play, if you're doing it to flip it, or maybe you want to get into the property and then season for 6 months or 9 months and then refinance it, then I wouldn't even be concerned about that. That's all irrelevant, because you're not going to be impacted by those things.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking more from the perspective of maybe long-term, somebody that, you know, they don't have access to private money, or they haven't been able to raise it, and they want to get into a property and maybe keep it as a rental. So I'm thinking something along those lines.
Yeah, then I would say definitely you want to explore what the pitfalls are of that potential transaction, you know, in the long run. But again, I would always, I think for me, my advice to the audience would be to always have some kind of exit strategy down the road. Just again, because, you know, there are pitfalls with the bank potentially calling and loan due and all that kind of stuff like that. I would just be prepared to have an exit strategy.
Yeah,
I get it. You know, that's my disclaimer is just be prepared to have the exit strategy. But, you know, and then just do your homework, you know, make sure you know what the repercussions are of the loan overall over a long-term period of time, if that's the direction you're going to go, and make sure that the pencil's out for you. In my business, I can't really speak to that because, you know, I use it for a short-term play.
Yep.
You know, I basically want to get in, get whatever I need to do with the property done and get the property sold or refinanced and move on. We use it primarily at this point when, okay, so we operate off a cash on cash return. We have a minimum cash on cash return. So if we're going to invest X, we want to make Y. And we use it now more so for the properties that don't work. When we do it based on, okay, we're going to fund 100% of the deal. We're going to buy the property. We're going to rehab it, resell it. And the cash on cash return is too small. But if we can go subject to on that deal and minimize our investment, then it becomes a deal that, you know, will work for us. Uh-huh. So we use it now just to basically, you know, close that gap of what, you know, deals we're willing to do and deals we're not willing to do. And since we're going, you know, investing less money into it, even though we may be making less than we normally would, the cash on cash return still is phenomenal and it ends up being a deal that we'll do.
Got it. That makes sense. And what, Don, what does that paperwork look like in terms of,
you know,
what you execute with the seller?
You want to have a subject to disclosure. So, and basically you can use a standard, you know, contract for your state for purchasing property. You can have your mini one page contract that a lot of people use. That as far as the core contract does, that doesn't really affect the transaction, but you do want to have a disclosure in there that says that, you know, you are buying the property subject to the existing liens and loans, that the seller understands that those loans and liens are going to stay in place and you're going to take responsibility for the payments, and you, that they understand that this can and, you know, could potentially violate a due on sale clause and that they're not going to do anything to, you know, basically to violate, you know, to bring attention to that. So,
yeah.
So you do want to have kind of a cover your butt clause in there. So, and it, you know, that clause may be different for each state. You know, I have one I could probably share with the audience that's kind of a template, but you definitely want to have, you know, whoever your legal resources are in your particular area, take a look at that and just make sure it fits for your state and your market.
Yeah, man, that would be awesome if you could share that. I think people it would make a lot more sense if they could see, you know, what some of that language looks like. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm glad you brought that up because that's one of the disclosures, or I should say a disclaimer I was going to say is, you know, Don, I don't know about you. I'm not an attorney. We're not giving legal advice here, obviously. So, right. And subject twos can be a little tricky. I'm sure there's some states out there in which, you know, either it can't be done or you have to do it in a very specific way. So check with a real estate attorney, you know, before you start doing subject twos, and just probably just good general advice is to, you know, when you're doing deals, you know, you want to just make sure that you're doing everything above board and the right way. Obviously, you don't want to find yourself in any type of legal mess because you didn't do your due diligence on how to do a certain type of deal.
Right. And one more caveat to that is when you, there's a tremendous amount of responsibility when you're taking somebody's property subject to, you have a responsibility to make those monthly payments. You know, you can't take that property subject to and not make their payments for the month or so you're rehabbing it and trying to sell it. You know, you do need to make sure that you're protecting the integrity of their credit. So it's important that you go in there with all the right intentions.
Yeah, I'm actually glad that you brought that up, but I'm sure is that I would have to think, and I haven't done subject twos in a long, long time. I probably did them like in 2006 and 2007. So it's been a while since I do them, but what are some of the common objections? I would think that's probably one of the main objections you get from homeowners is, well, how am I assured that you're going to actually make the payments, right? Like what happens if you don't? How do you typically handle that objection?
You know, to be honest with you, I rarely got an objection to subject two. In all of them that I did, I can't remember one that really stands out. How I would answer it. I mean, you'd be amazed at if you frame anything properly, you know, most people get it and they'll go with it. So, but how I would answer that is just, you know, figure out what the seller, what works for you guys. Do you, I mean, first of all, I would say control that payment. Don't ever give it to the seller because you don't know what they're making the payment. For you know, sure. They may take it. Yeah. And go to the Bahamas. So control the payment, but maybe you show them a copy of the canceled check every month. You know, you contracted, you know, you're agreeing that the payment will be to the bank by the 5th of every month or the 10th of every month. And you show them, you overnight it, you show them a tracking number and a copy of the canceled check. I mean, there are things you can do. Anything can be agreed upon. You just got to come to terms on what everybody's comfortable with. If you get that objection, then, you know, figure that out. But in most cases, I don't think people are really going to be too concerned about it.
Yep. I got it, man. So cool, man. Well, hey, listen, let's put a bow kind of on the podcast here. This is one question I always ask experts I have on. And so first thing that comes to mind is what you should probably go with. But I'm not sure how old you are, but rewind the clock. What's the one piece of advice you would give your 20 or 25 year old Don Costa? Like, what would you tell, you know, knowing what you know now, if you could, you know, reverse the clock 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever that might be, when you were around 20, 25 years old, what would you tell yourself? And it doesn't have to be necessarily about being an entrepreneur and building a business. It could be just anything in general.
You know, I'm laughing as you ask me that because my first response is, hey, buddy, pull your head out of your butt.
Hey, you know? I'd probably tell myself the same exact thing, dude.
Yeah. I would go back and just, I think, just tell myself that there's no reason to worry about all the what ifs. You know, there really isn't. There's so many opportunities out there. And who cares if you fail? Who cares if you fall on your face? I've had so many failures in my life and I'm still successful at this point in time, or what most people consider successful. Uh-huh. And it's, you know, you get yourself out there, you stumble and you learn from it, and you get up, you dust yourself off and you go back to work and you figure it out. So, put yourself out there, you know, find the right mentor, find the right education that fits you, get some information, but don't get the analysis paralysis thing going on. Don't let it get in your way. Just get out there and implement it and put it into action and learn from it. So, take action, I guess. That's is awesome. What I would say. Absolutely.
Love it, man. Love it. Cool, dude. Well, hey, man, I know you have a really good podcast called Flip Talk. I don't know if you want to talk about that for a second, or where just people can reach out to you and find out more about what you have going on.
Yeah, I have a podcast called Flip Talk, and I have a great time doing it. I get to talk to some incredible people that have incredible knowledge. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, you name it, you can find us. You know, you can go to fliptalk.com and put your email in, and you'll get notified whenever we're launching an episode. And then, of course, you can reach me at don@fliptalk.com. I answer all my own emails, and I do respond, and I love the interaction with the audience. So, yeah, I mean, it's great stuff.
Cool, man. I love it, dude. Well, hey, man, it was awesome having you on. I think, you know, I know a lot of people are going to get value from this, and hopefully people don't hear that we're talking about networking and they just kind of assume they know it all. Or I think it's just really, it's like we talked about, you know, to kind of put everything together, speed of implementation is we can all do more networking, right? I think it's one of those areas where if you just put the effort and the time into it, eventually you're going to see things happening from it, positive results. So I know for me, man, I know, you know, I this is an area where I could do a lot better in. And just having talked to you on the podcast here and hearing your story, it's definitely something that I'm going to do a lot more of going forward. So really appreciate you sharing that, man. And I know I'm looking forward to being on Flip Talk. So thanks again, man, for the time.
Definitely. Thank you. Okay, very much.
Awesome. All right, guys. Hey, listen, we have another, we got a Q&A show coming up on Thursday. Make sure you tune in for that. And then you're really going to enjoy next week's masterclass as well. So if you guys have any questions that you want me to feature in an upcoming show, just go to flipempire.com, click on the Ask Alex link at the top, and I'll be happy to answer it in an upcoming show. Talk to you guys soon. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text Empire to 670-076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.